I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Mike Tomlin news conference coming up momentarily. He won't have to look far to motivate his team for this game. At least to point out what can go wrong in Cleveland on a Thursday night. Jacoby Brissett diced up the Steelers a couple of years ago. And a couple of years before that was the infamous Mason Rudolph incident in which he was attacked with his own helmet by Myles Garrett. Plus, just last year in Cleveland, the Steelers lost to DTR. That was the bottoming out of the Matt Canada regime. Remember limits? That didn't go well, did it? So they could lose in Cleveland to anybody, anywhere, anytime, especially on a Thursday night. And I'm sure that Tomlin will remind his team of that. Man, do the Steelers look so different and feel so different than they did after that horrendous day in Cleveland last year. Feels like one of the first steps to becoming, you know, a real football team, an actual contender, was moving on from that offensive coordinator. So whoever made that call, good for them. Tomlin's job is very difficult in this news conference, of course, because he has to make the Browns sound good. That ain't easy this year because they stink. And this better be a win, especially if you have real designs on the number one seed. Is Pomp still buying time for Tomlin right now? Limits? How does Pomp look today? Good?
He looks good. He's wearing a nice blue sweater and a blue dress shirt.
Maybe a little Christmassy, a little holiday spirit for Pomp today?
Yeah, I can see it. It's got like a nice pattern on it, some diamonds.
I'd be curious if someone will ask Tomlin about the timeout he called before the second two-point conversion by the Ravens. It seemed like they got a pretty good read or maybe took away Baltimore's favored play there. And it seemed like the Ravens were in a bit of disarray. If you look at Likely and Aguilar before the next play, waving each other, you go here, you go there. And then the play itself was just horrific. Absolutely horrific. I don't know what happened. Great play by Joey Porter, though. There was supposed to be a receiver. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, there had to have been.
And it just was just complete disorganization and a disaster, which it often is for the Ravens late in games against the Steelers. What is happening here, Limits? Are we ready?
All right, here we go.
Here's the coach, I think.
Good afternoon. Under normal circumstances, I start with a, you know, analysis of the video of our last performance, but to be completely transparent with you, man, I have not watched a snap of it. On a short week, man, my attention needs to turn to Cleveland. And so my assessing of the game really is just kind of from memory conversations and, you know, reading the game book and seeing some things on highlights and so forth. As I mentioned after the game, man, I was really excited about the efforts of the guys. I think there's growth associated in being in games like that and persevering and doing what is required to win. It's growth for the collective. It's growth in not only belief in themselves, but each other and what it is that we're doing. And I think it just further positions you for appropriate performance with challenges that lie ahead. And so it was productive from that standpoint. Obviously, it wasn't a perfect effort, but I'm appreciative of it. As I mentioned, post-game, man, what can you say about Chris Boswell in 2024? That hadn't been written or said. He's been everything that we need him to be. He is performing at an extremely high level. We're extremely comfortable in calling upon him in just about any circumstances. It's just been special. And to do what he's done, obviously, with a change at Holder in the middle of the thing is doubly impressive. And so I'd be remiss if I didn't start first with his contributions and, you know, Corliss not only as a punter but as a holder, just being solid in the specialist form of play. That collective in particular has been rock solid for us. Can't say enough about what Corliss has been doing for us in terms of flipping the field as well. The field position component is always going to be significant when you're in games like that, and it was. Not only in terms of what Corliss did or what Boz was able to do from great distances in terms of securing points for us, but the turnover game I thought was significant. We got turnovers, and we provided the offense the short field a couple of times, and, you know, that's big in a game like that. Obviously, we didn't perform well in the red area on offense. Anytime a guy kicks six field goals, you have some things to work on, but it's good to do that with a W. But it's also important that we acknowledge the talents and the expertise of the Ravens. We've been in a bunch of games like that with those guys. It's always back and forth. There's always going to be some components of the game that are troublesome to you from a performance standpoint, but that's just the nature of being in five-star matchups. And so we'll grow from it. We'll grow with the W as we lean in on this next outing. And obviously this next outing is a really significant one. When you have back-to-back division games, it is significant, but also to have back-to-back division games and the second one be on a short week on the road, man, that has our attention and urgency from a lot of perspectives. Obviously, we got to make really good decisions this week about strategy, what to run, what not to run, what can we perform on a limited amount of physical repetitions, what do we need to, you know, take a calculated risk in terms of running on a limited amount of physical repetitions. I just think that that's always the case on Thursday. We don't default to, you know, base menus and things of that nature, particularly when you're playing someone that is familiar with you as Cleveland is with us. It is worth the trouble to ponder what's appropriate to run and what's not. How innovative can we be? How expansive can our menus be? And press the envelope in that direction. And so we got some hardcore decisions there. You also got some hardcore decisions about how you work. What's the nature of your work? Are they walkthroughs? Are there run-throughs on a limited amount of preparation time on a short week? What does that look like? And, you know, you manage the balancing act of getting them in the stadium physically prepared while at the same time preserving them, acknowledging that they were in a significant physical football game yesterday. And so we got that decision to make. And then how to best utilize the last 24 hours. You know, we'll go to Cleveland on Wednesday. Oftentimes when you travel on the road, that last 24 hours is loosely organized, not necessarily so on a short week. How we organize that time, how we utilize that time, players and coaches, I think will be significant in terms of determining our readiness. And so those are some of the things that have had my attention as I quickly transition to this prep. On an injury note, hadn't checked in on Alex Highsmith in terms of seeing what his availability might look like. If you press me, I'd probably say he's more out than in, but we'll see where this short week leads us. Like the trajectory of some others, Pruitt. Benton went down in game, but that appears to be a non-issue from yesterday. All the guys that sustained something in game doesn't appear to be an issue moving forward. And so that's exciting. We opened the window for Corey Trice, as you guys know, last week, and he had a good week's work and may be available to us. And so we'll see where that leads us as well. And so we'll manage some of these player availability things and division of labor things, particularly on a short week, how you distribute carries, how you distribute reps in terms of defenders in an effort to keep everyone fresh, I think is critical strategic decisions that have to happen on a short week. I'm not complaining about it by any stretch. Cleveland has to make the same decisions, and so from that standpoint, is very fair. I'll turn my attention now to Cleveland and talk about some of the challenges of preparing for them. starting first and foremost with their offense, man, I'm really just trying to get a sense of what does Ken Dorsey as the primary play caller mean? How is it different? What are the challenges for us relative to what we're used to regarding Cleveland? And so that's going to be a challenge. Obviously, we've seen Ken in the past from his time in Buffalo, but these last three games weigh a heck of a lot more than the ones that precede because of the significance of him as the central play caller. Coupled with that, obviously, is Winston in at quarterback, and so we got to familiarize ourselves with that tandem and how they work and what does that mean to their schematics and personality on offense. Obviously, they got some known people that we have to deal with. Mr. Chubb, first and foremost, just got so much respect for his game and his body of work and his capabilities. From an appreciator of football standpoint, man, it's really good to see him back. But from a guy that competes against him this week, obviously, he has our attention. Jerome Ford, I thought, stood in for him in a real solid way a year ago and continues to do those things. Man, he's a home run hitter. He's a guy that's capable of breaking big runs. He broke a big run on us last year. His last year at Cincinnati, we did a lot of work on him in draft prep. I think he had more explosion runs than anybody in that draft pool. And so his big play capabilities have our attention. They got some turnover at the receiver position, but it's not a lack of talent there. Judy is new to them, but he's not new to the NFL, man. He's coming off of a really big game. They acquired Moore from the Jets last year, and he's a top-notch slot receiver. There's been some strong development in Tillman on the outside, and I think his growth and development is probably the central reason why they were comfortable moving on from Cooper at the trade deadline. Watching his play and looking at his statistics, and particularly of late, you see that growth in production and the cohesion that he's gaining in terms of his professional career. We got some work to do there. And then last week was the first time they activated Tony. And they had some packages for him. You couple all of those eligibles that I mentioned with Njoku at tight end, and obviously we're highly familiar with him. He is a challenge. He does a lot of things well. His vertical game is excellent. I've been really impressed with the development of his blocking over the years. Man, he has become a significant point of attack blocker. I don't think he was that when he came into the league. As a matter of fact, I think I complimented him on it post-game last year. It's real. His point of attack blocking is excellent. The tight end screen game and him as an outlet to the quarterback is a dangerous one because his run after abilities are unique for the position. You can throw a tight end screen, he can turn it into a big gain. They can throw him a check down or a spot over the ball. He can bounce off some tacklers in your secondary and turn it into a big game. And so we got a lot on that side of the ball to get ready for and to be urgent about. Particularly because of the lack of familiarity in some instances, particularly at the quarterback and play caller position. Some of the receivers are new, and so we got some challenges there. They got more continuity on the defensive side of the ball, but it doesn't mean that it's easy work. Jim Schwartz last year in his first year proved his capabilities. Man, he's been at it a long time. They were tops in the league in a lot of things last year. Pass defense, yards per game, and things of that nature. They got really good continuity in staffing and in the secondary, and so we're working to manage those things. Denzel Ward is top-notch, but Newsom, that whole tandem, that whole collective back there is top-notch. The safety group, Delpit, Thornhill, they've all played really good ball, and as I mentioned, they were a top-tier pass defense group in the league last year, man, and they got after you. They play a lot of people. They're multiple. Delpit is very versatile, man. He plays safety. He plays big nickel. He plays dime in passing circumstances. He plays corner in some one wide out packages when you go big on offense. And so they got versatile players. The same could be said for nickel. Newsom's capable of playing inside and out. Ward is capable of playing inside and out, although I hadn't seen him inside of late. That is on his resume and in his background. The positional flexibility and versatility of those guys, coupled with the continuity, is a challenge. Obviously, up front, we got to deal with Myles Garrett. Man, he's a game wrecker. You get in one-dimensional moments, man, you better be real solid there. It's not possible that he's going to impact the game. It's probable in those circumstances. We're highly familiar with that. I'd imagine the Chargers were less familiar because he took that game over a couple of weeks ago in a big way. But we know he's capable of that. We've been in stadium with him quite often. And so we got some work to do in terms of preparing ourselves to minimize him and that collective up front. They allocate a lot of resources to that group. Tomlinson is a big-time run-stopping interior guy who's also providing some top-notch interior pocket push for him. The interior games have been eye-opening. They've gotten some pressure and gotten home some. And when they collapse the pocket in that way, they just make it easier for guys like Myles Garrett on the edge to get home as well. And so those things have our attention. The environmental component has our attention, man. Thursday night in a hostile division environment is something that we need to be ready for. We've been really fortunate in road game environments this year in terms of the support of our fans and their ability to acquire tickets, man. D.C., Atlanta, Vegas, Denver, et cetera. I don't know that that's going to happen in Cleveland. I know as a collective we better be prepared for a hostile environment, the dog pound, et cetera. And so we got some new people, whether they're new to us and new to the National Football League, that need some quick education while we do the physical work that's necessary to position ourselves for performance. And so it's very early in this process, got a lot of work to do, but excited about doing it, excited about leaning in on divisional play. We understand the significance of divisional play, and I'm excited about getting this group into this week, man. You learn about yourself every week, but when the variables change, primetime football, road football, et cetera, the short week is a component of it as well. I'm excited about seeing the maturity level, the professionalism of this group as they embark on the preparation associated with a short week. I'll pause and open it up for questions.
Mike, given the stature of that game and the offense you were facing, the quarterback you were facing, is that as well as you've seen the defense playing?
You know, I hadn't thought about it. I'm never surprised when they play well, particularly when they prepare the way that they prepared last week. And so I don't know that I viewed it through that lens. It's more satisfaction than anything else because I know our talent level. I know our professionalism and our preparedness. I thought they had a good week's work. I thought they were wired in. I thought Justin really challenged them. They had a good challenge in terms of prep, in terms of utilizing his skill set to represent that. And so it's probably more satisfaction than anything else.
Mike, you referenced an edge yesterday that you got from that good prep you were just talking about. How do you capture that in a short week scenario?
You don't necessarily do or attempt to. I think one of the things and key variables that you weigh is how do you best position the group to perform? And by that, I mean, how do you get them in the stadium in the very best physical condition you can get them in on a short week? And so sometimes physical preparation gets compromised on a short week. But, again, I'm not complaining about it. I imagine that Cleveland is tasked with the same challenges. I think we all are. Those critical decisions that need to be made about how you work on a short week is a major component of performance.
Understanding the point that you made, you haven't had time to do the deep dive on yesterday's game, but in the moment, as you were watching it, where do you think you could have been better on third downs and in the red zone?
You know, in a lot of areas, in all areas, but I'd be remiss if I didn't credit those guys. As we talked in here last week, I said don't be misled by some of the statistics regarding Baltimore's defense, that they are a top-notch defense, and sometimes you know, being last in passing just reflects that you're in pole position in a lot of games and people lose their personality and get one-dimensional. And I still feel that. They're a salty group. Even though they got a new play caller, they got continuity in their approach to business. They got continuity in a lot of players. And sometimes, man, I just like to give credit to those that we compete against as opposed to crying and whining about our lack of performance in certain areas. Make no mistake, we got room for growth in a lot of areas, but they played well also.
You guys possessed the ball pretty well in the second half, four straight drives of eight plays or more. What did you feel that you guys adjusted to possess the ball longer in that situation?
I don't know that there was any adjustments made. Sometimes it's just fluidity of performance, particularly in a game like that, where emotions are a major component of it. You saw some chippiness on both sides early in the game. I think halftime was an opportunity for us to gather ourselves and control our emotions and direct it properly toward execution. At least that's what we talked about. I think the play is kind of reflective of that.
The passing game hasn't been as efficient the last 2 weeks as it was in Russ's first two starts. Is there a common denominator to that?
You know, I hadn't thought about it in terms of a broad brush. We were in a hostile environment in D.C., and sometimes that's challenging. In one-dimensional passing moments, we played a really good defense last week. And so, you know, it's probably not enough of a sample size to stimulate me in the ways that you suggest at this juncture.
You said last week you weren't sure how you were going to divide up the reps between Herbig and Smith. Turned out to be a lot of Herbig, and he came through with a couple big plays. What did you see that was what you wanted to do with him?
We were getting off the field. We were possessing the ball some on offense. There wasn't as many defensive snaps to go around. Herbig's, you know, conditioning or lack thereof, what is compromised because of those things, and it made the divvying of the reps a less significant discussion, to be quite honest with you.
Can you talk about specifically him blowing up the two-point conversion and how key he was in that play?
He's a big-time player, man. He's a young guy, but even in a small sample size, I think we all recognize his playmaking capabilities, and I think any of us that are around him are not surprised when he makes significant plays, particularly in significant moments, man. He trains under the likes of T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith, man. He's got some great role models, and he's got an awesome work ethic and mindset to boot. And so I'm not surprised by it at all.
Looking at players like Preston Smith and Mike Williams who are new to your team, is there anything you can possibly do in a short week like this to get them more involved, or is it just...
I think every day is an opportunity to do that. There's a cumulative component to their involvement that has nothing to do with this week. We're just building upon days that we've already laid out. And so I'm excited about continuing to get to know them more and how they might be able to help us and infusing them more into what it is that we do.
Mike, what is the impact of the play of your defensive line to what you guys are doing defensively, especially the depth with that group?
You know, we got to play a lot of people, particularly when you're chasing somebody like Mr. Jackson. You know, he challenges your group with his athleticism, and, you know, we know that. That's a mode of operation. A lot of people ask us about how we play him like we're, you know, splitting the atom or something. We're not. We play hard, fast, and smart together, and a component of that is playing a lot of people because you know the pack is going to be needed when you're chasing somebody like that.
Yesterday's just one example, but so just but in general, as a coach, either on either side of it, in a weighty situation, a two-point conversion, you call a timeout. Are you trying to get them to change their play, or are you trying to, you think they're going to run the same play? If somebody does it, do you run the same play?
I got no control over whether or not they change their play or not. I really wanted to look at their structure to see what mindset they were in and have an opportunity to maybe talk about it and better ready our guys and maybe eliminate some other concepts that might be less relevant based on what it is that we're looking at. And so that was the mindset. Whether or not they repeated their play or changed their play is not up to me.
When you called that timeout, they had started to the play. And it looked like Lamar was maybe going to take a step forward and maybe try that jump pass or something.
It did kind of look like that, didn't it?
That play in, I mean, did you think about that for the next during the timeout? I mean,
you're damn right I did.
Mike, Peyton Wilson made a significant play in a critical moment for you. What have you learned about the way that he works, you know, having him for half a season now at this point, to set himself up for that kind of an opportunity?
You know, it's not necessarily the work template that he sets for himself. It's much like talking about Herbig. He's got some real solid professionals in his group, and they Landon Roberts and Patrick Queen. And he does a good job of just being a humble young guy, man, and coming alongside those guys and learning from them and asking good questions. He is willing to work, but that's often the case with a lot of young guys, man. They don't have necessarily a template of how they go about their business on a 7-day cycle. But I see the makings of good professionalism in him in that he's a tireless worker. He's legitimately humble. He asks good questions and he listens and follows veteran guys that do it the right way.
To your previous point, Mike, about the continuity that Cleveland has on defense, a little bit more so than offense and the environment that they're in. Do those two hands wash each other when it comes to the challenges that you guys have had up there in recent seasons?
No question. The environmental component, primetime television, The wave that Myles Garrett and others provide up front, they've had a top quality rush group for a number of years. You couple that with a talented and veteran secondary group. They're good up front. They got a nice umbrella on the back end. I think they were first in the league last year in terms of explosion plays in the passing game. They gave up 39 passes of 29 yards or more in 2023. And so, you know, when they're making you earn it and they're not giving up things by chunks and they got a dominant group up front, that's a tough nut to crack, particularly when you're in their environment. And so, yes, those things that I outlined and others have our attention from a prep standpoint.
Where do you see Mike Williams at right now as far as jump on the moving train? He caught the game-winning touchdown last week, but had around the same amount of snaps as Calvin Austin, less than Van Jefferson this week.
I like his work. You know, how we feel about his progress is not always reflected in statistics. We'll keep working. He's doing a great job fitting in. We're doing a good job of getting to know him. I like the trajectory of it.
Do you foresee him maybe getting a higher share of snaps in the near future?
You know, we'll see, man. It just really is week to week. And from a matchup perspective, of how we put our plan together, I'd be speculating, particularly at this stage of the week, this early. I'd be making it up, and I just don't want to mislead you.
Mike, you were emphatic about sticking with Broderick Jones. Where do you see the more need for improvement? Is it with the penalties or with the pass pro?
You know, he's a young guy, man. He's younger than all the rookies at his position, to put perspective on it. Zach Frazier and McCormick are older than him. And so he's got growth in all areas ahead of him, but he's also has an awesome skill set. And so we're experiencing some bumps and bruises associated with on-the-job training. Like I mentioned yesterday, I have no intentions of blinking, and neither does he. And we'll just keep working.
Mike, you mentioned the critical decisions that need to be made about how you guys work on a short week. How do you see some of the veteran players on your group kind of instill the knowledge of, hey, how do you prepare for a short week to some of the young guys?
You know, it's not a lot of help that they can provide. It's a short week, man. We're trying to get 8 pounds in a 5-pound bag. Those that learn quickly will have a place in terms of the division of labor. Those that don't, those that need physical reps, will be minimized. And I don't know that them talking about it is going to aid that.
Anyone else?
Mike, Mika hasn't had the turnovers this year, but is he doing things maybe to help set up other people for what they're doing?
Man, he's doing a great job, to be quite honest with you. But again, I think the turnovers will come. I think oftentimes when you play on the back end, you're defined by takeaways, just like when you play up front, you're defined by sacks, but it's not always the storyteller. But those of us that are in this business, we realize to a degree that you're measured by it, and so, you know, he'll keep working, but I'm not displeased by anything that he's doing, certainly. And we're asking him to do a lot of things, but we always ask him to do a lot of things. I'm really excited about Cam Sutton being back, because Cam's presence is really helpful in terms of being able to move him around even more, because Cam is so versatile.
Right. Joey didn't give up a catch yesterday, and he obviously had the big play on the 2-point conversion to get Lamar down. How did you see him respond in practice last week after a kind of a rough outing in Washington?
You know, I don't even necessarily describe Washington as a rough outing, to be quite honest with you. He's aggressive and aggressive in play, and always has been. You know, his confidence is unshakable. He's a good player, and it showed yesterday.
Mike, you're getting Darnell Washington more involved in the middle of the field with some of those routes. Is that, how significant is that for what you guys want to do?
You know, it's big when you get a guy like that running down the middle of the field. We're really just trying to spread the ball around and take what the defense gives us, and to have enough depth and talent in all positions where we're comfortable doing that. And I think Darnell's, you know, play in the open middle of the field is a reflection of that. We got guys on the perimeter that people are concerned about from a one-on-one matchup standpoint. Guys like GP and Mike Williams have reputations and resumes that merit, you better be careful about one-on-one matchups. And so that pushes people to shells and two high safeties, and then the middle of the field is open. And so it's going to be opportunities for guys like Darnell. It all kind of works hand in hand. You asked me about the lack of opportunity for Mike. It might just mean what, you know, Baltimore was doing in terms of the two high shell, which opened up an opportunity for two explosion plays for Darnell Washington. That's just the nature of what it is that we do. We know and understand that. Oftentimes I don't take enough time or care enough to explain it to you guys, and I probably should do it more.
Mike, what did you see from him on the interception relative to what you wanted to see?
I'm sorry?
Washington. How did he play the ball that ultimately got intercepted?
I just wish Rush hadn't thrown it.
I think it was Queen that said that Joey, first he said Joey's the quietest guy on the defense, and he said Joey said something before the two-point conversion. A, is Joey really that quiet in team settings? B, it's a second-year player for him to speak in that huddle.
The quietest guy in that group doesn't necessarily mean quiet. Joey couldn't get a word in if he was trying sometimes because of the nature of that group. But that group respects him, even though he's a young guy. His talents, his work, his approach, all of that merits attention in terms of when he speaks, people listen, and I'd imagine that'll happen more the longer he's here and the more plays he makes.
You talk about familiarity. Dan Morrison, a lot of Myles Garrett. That's the same both ways. What do you need to do as a player to turn that familiarity into an advantage?
You know, I don't know that we view that as a one-on-one matchup, to be quite honest with you. And it's no slight against Dan Moore. It's just the talent level of Myles Garrett. I think you identify any tackle and match him up with Myles Garrett, it's not possible that he's going to get home. It's probable, particularly if it's in a one-dimensional circumstance. And so certainly Dan is going to have his opportunities to be matched up against Myles, but I doubt that it's going to be in one-on-one circumstances, particularly in one-dimensional passing moments.
Coach, when Ravens week ends and ends with a victory, do you feel more sense of relief or more sense of elation?
Really, I'm just on to Cleveland. Maybe it's just the nature that this is a Thursday night, but by the time my car leaves that parking lot, I'm on the move. I've been in it too long to bathe in it, to be quite honest with you.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Anyone else? All right.
Thanks, guys.
Mike Tomlin, Presser Reaction, brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you now, there will be soon. One guy he didn't mention for your Cleve Brownies, Brian Batko, who has entered the building here of the Post-Gazette. Devin Bush, perhaps a Mr. Bush, was warranted here. Devin Bush has 16 tackles over the last 2 weeks. Three of them tackles for loss, plus a sack. Did he have a sack in his Steeler career? Mr. Bush, they're going to have to contend with, Brian. And how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thank you for your inquiry. And yes, I think Devin Bush had at least one sack in his time here. And I'm seeing that he was the Browns' leading tackler yesterday against the Saints. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if he's... What did he say last week about Deontay Johnson? And not a significant piece of what they're doing.
Yeah, he could have said that.
So, but he is. He played almost 75% of the snaps. I'm not going to lie to you and say I've watched back Brown Saints at all. But
Watched the tape. I've combed through every single play.
Good. So you can tell me.
On all 22.
You can tell me how big of a...
I don't know.
How big of a factor was number 30 in the middle to Taysom Hill looking like Bo Jackson in that game? Because Mike Tomlin had a lot to say about... the umbrella on the back end. You do always want a good umbrella on the back end like the Browns have, but Taysom Hill ran wild for 138 yards.
Yeah, they ran for 214 yards, and you undo some of the great you've done here if you lose to the Cleve Brownies. They allowed almost 500 yards. They stink. A couple things that stood out about Tomlin's news conference, just the little comment about Russ, and I agree with him there. On that ball that he threw to Mount Washington, jump ball.
I'd like to see a couple more angles of that. I mean, it looked pretty high from the press box.
But you got to jump and try to tip it if you're Mount Washington.
So you don't agree with Tomlin. Tomlin said he just wishes Russ wouldn't have thrown it.
Oh, no. If I'm placing blame in order, it's Russell Wilson, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, all the way to 100. But that doesn't take away the fact that Mount Washington needed to jump and try to break it.
Yeah, the two things I'll say to that. Number one, maybe he thought from his vantage point, is he throwing this away? Is this going out of the back of the end zone? Because it is pretty tall. And two, as somebody who watches Darnell every day in practice, what he's done as a route runner and pass catcher has been a pleasant surprise to me. I don't know how well he can jump at this stage of his...
Then just reach your arm up a little higher.
You
got to do something there. But yes, I'm with Tomlin. I just wish he hadn't thrown it. That was actually a good line. What stood out to you, Brian, what Tomlin said?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously, again, you know, all the good that he says about the Browns, not really a whole lot of the bad, which is clearly, you know, the way they were leaking in the run defense. He found ways to still kind of talk up the Ravens secondary this time a week ago. And as he mentioned, he was kind of proven right in that they were, word he used, saltier than people were giving them credit for. And I mean, Mike Williams questions, you know, that deserves to be asked the day after he was basically invisible in that game.
But Tomlin said he helped open up the field a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you buy that?
Potentially. And I did always kind of think, you know, especially coming after last week's game against the Commanders, I didn't foresee the game-winning touchdown to be the jumping-off point for it to be a Mike Williams renaissance here in Pittsburgh. I always thought he's probably going to be more valuable to their offense, you know, his presence than any sort of numbers or statistics or box score would indicate. So,
yeah.
After you get through this short week, you've got kind of that mini bye, you'll have a bonus day of practice. I would think ramping it up for the following game, the Bengals would be even better for Williams.
I think the most interesting thing in that whole
I think I know what you're going to say
is the whole timeout situation before the 2-point play. Connor Orr did a whole piece on that in Sports Illustrated today. Mike Tomlin just outfoxed Harbaugh again late in the game. And man, you watch, it was Lamar going to his right decisively, and it was either going to be a keeper or it did look like he had a jump pass option. Tomlin calls timeout. I think that Harbaugh figured Tomlin was going to keep all his timeouts in case the Steelers... How much time was left at that point?
Was it about a minute, maybe?
Yeah, to go down the field and try and win.
A little more than a minute, because Fields slid, I think, with a minute.
Yeah, to try to go down the field and win the game. I think he surprised Harbaugh. I think he got a look at what they were doing, and they didn't switch the personnel. The main point of that, Brian, and then I'll throw it back to you, is when Tomlin said, I wanted to see what mindset they were in and eliminate some concepts that might be less relevant. Yeah, like Derrick Henry, not on the field. What are you doing, Harbaugh? You don't want to have that guy on the field either to run the ball for 2 yards or take away a lot of attention from the Steelers if Lamar wants to put it in his stomach and then keep it. What? You don't have Derrick Henry on the field, or Flowers, by the way. But Derrick Henry stood out, and I thought that Tomlin got a good look at their personnel and put himself in a good defense, and then the Ravens were just completely discombobulated. You saw Likely and Aguilar, you know, waving hands at each other.
Trying to figure out where to stand, yeah.
And then Charles Davis on the broadcast said, I think there was supposed to be a receiver in that play, and there was none.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of that falls on Harbaugh and how much is on the offensive coordinator, Todd Monken, but either way, it still comes down to the head coach to say, all right, I've got the final say on all this, and kind of I'm supposed to have the bird's eye view. We better do something different because Mike's a step ahead of us. And I did think the tone and tenor of that little exchange with Jerry Dulac was Mike Tomlin about as much as he could saying, yeah, we've faced each other a lot of times, and I've got this guy in a vice grip right now. Make no mistake about it.
No Derrick Henry. Are you with me on that? That from the 2-yard line to not have him on the field is ridiculous.
Yeah, they didn't use him really at all in the fourth quarter. He didn't have a carry, right, in the fourth.
13 in the game.
Yeah. I mean, that's always one of those issues where, hey, you kind of pick your poison every time it's going to Henry. At least that's a play that it's not in the hands of Lamar Jackson. But I did think the Ravens would establish the run earlier and more decisively in that game, no doubt.
I don't know, man. With 2 yards to go, I would have arguably the best running back in all of football on the field for me, at the very least, as a drawer of attention.
Yeah, I mean, and you see some of the short yardage issues the Steelers had earlier in the game where they kind of just tried to put their head down and say, we have Najee Harris, let's get a yard.
Yeah.
it's easy to say in retrospect, a little more creativity would have been nice from Arthur Smith. Maybe they would have been saying the same thing in Baltimore had they gone to Henry and got blown up. But that goal line touchdown that he had earlier in the game kind of showed me Robert Spillane wasn't walking through that door to jump over the line.
Although Landon Roberts might have
he
been.
He might. Was he didn't on that field? Play, but it's true that he could always be the hammer on that.
And I think another thing, and this is the last thing, before we move on here with Brian Bacco of the Post-Gazette, is there was a stark contrast, no pun intended, between Tomlin and a couple of members of our station. Yesterday, it was Andrew Filippone popping up like Waldo, suddenly, from out of the blue, asking questions at the news conference, and Tomlin seemingly wanting no part of that, giving one-word answers.
Big game pony.
Big game pony. And then Jeff Hathorn asking a question. Very respectable man over there. And Tomlin going into a lengthy answer. Let's hear the contrast. Let's first hear, I think Pony had three questions. Let's get a sampling of a Pony question and answer, and then the Jeff question.
Mike, if somebody had said to you before the game you'd beat the Ravens without scoring a touchdown, what would your reaction have been?
Steelers, Ravens.
Then let's get Jeff Hathorn.
Mike, Minka hasn't had the turnovers this year, but is he doing things maybe to help set up other people for what they're doing?
Man, he's doing a great job, to be quite honest with you. But again, I think the turnovers will come. I think oftentimes when you play on the back end, you're defined by takeaways, just like when you play up front, you're defined by sacks, but it's not always the storyteller. But those of us that are in this business, we realize to a degree that you're measured by it, and so, you know, he'll keep working, but I'm not displeased by anything that he's doing, certainly. And we're asking him to do a lot of things, but we always ask him to do a lot of things. I'm really excited about Cam Sutton being back, because Cam's presence is really helpful in terms of being able to move him around even more, because Cam is so versatile.
So a very long and thoughtful answer. And I guess my question for you, Brian, is this. How long, if Pony became a regular, would it take him to enter the stratosphere of most disliked questioners of Tomlin, by Tomlin himself, with the likes of, I'm talking all time here, Benzi, Jory Rand, David Todd, Aditi Kinkabwala, and Brooke Pryor? Does Pony, 2 weeks, maybe one more? One more, is he already up there?
I don't know, Joe. I mean, despite how many times I've sat in those rooms, press conferences, midweek or post-game, I can never really figure out what gets long answers from Tomlin, what ones he wants to cut off.
I know which ones get short answers from history.
But not always. Not always.
Most, I mean, you can't tell which people annoy him the most.
Brooke asked a couple questions today that got perfectly normal answers. He's thoughtfully non-rhythmic.
Maybe thoughtfully non-rhythmic. Over the years, he has not responded kindly to her questions.
Yes, there are more.
Todd, Benzi. Benzi has softened a little, I think.
Yeah, he's gotten the shovel and started to dig his way back up to ground level. So,
Do you think Tomlin is aware of who Pony is and is annoyed by him on site or no?
I don't know. I could see it going either way, because also those questions, they were perfectly good questions by Pony, in my opinion. I didn't think there was any issue with them, but they are kind of the hot button questions that Tomlin doesn't necessarily get a lot and probably doesn't really give you much on, and that's why he doesn't get them a lot. You know what I mean? So
What do you mean hot button questions?
What would you say if you'd somebody had told you Steelers, Ravens, you'd win without it? Like, it's a good question. We're all talking about it after the game, but Tomlin, he doesn't really play ball a lot of the times with those. And it was still a good answer when you figure it was funny, it was entertaining.
It was.
You know?
What makes
a good question? Is it a good, because you can ask.
I thought the question was great.
Right. And there's been times where you can ask what someone might consider, why would you ask him that? And it gets a hilarious answer or a newsworthy answer. And then now all of a sudden, great question.
Brian,
it's like a bad play call that works.
I like thoughtfully non-rhythmic is the best way to describe that. Yes. Thank you, Brian. That's why Brian makes the big bucks. He'll be with me until the end of the show today. Let's break this all down.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.